This is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Frenari, clinical nutritionist, physician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back. Today we have one of those fun shows. Carol, my co-host.
Hello. Good day, everybody.
You're not used to that entry, are you? So well. Carol, my co-host, and I will be talking. But there was something that precipitated this conversation. And I've got to tell you, I went out to my garden, oh my goodness, with all the rain every other day and all the sunshine on the alternate days, I have so many vegetables and so many tomatoes, and literally every day I go out with big baskets and I'm collecting vegetables out of my garden. It's just such a joy. I make jokes about that I'm going to have to limit the number of tomatoes people eat because they're eating dessert. They're so sweet and delicious. They're just amazing and all organic. My garden has been packed every year with seaweed, which I go down in the fall and just start raking up. I look like a bag lady, filling these big black bags, raking along the water, and the kids helping me lift them into the car. It's really kind of fun. It's a fun ritual that we've been doing for quite a few years. I have chickens also, so taking the chicken droppings that are mixed in with wood flakes and putting that all over the top of the garden and then just letting it rest. And what happens is over the winter, it literally gets broken down and dissolves. So when you go out to the garden, all you can see is dirt. You can't find a trace of seaweed. You can't find a trace of wood chips. Nothing. It's all just been dissolved into the garden. So the first thing we do is when we go out there is we turn the soil. And then, after we turn the soil about a week or two before we're going to plant, then we plant. And what happened this year was nothing less than remarkable. It's just hard to imagine that out of, Carol, you put 10 seeds in your hand, and you look down at these little...
Those tomato seeds?
Yeah, you look down at these little specks and you say, it takes a lot of faith to look at these specks and think of dinner.
Yep.
It really does. It takes faith. It takes kind of a trust in nature. And so there you are putting these teeny little seeds in this soil that smells so delicious when you put your hands in it. It's just clean and fruity and delicious. And
I heard of a guy who was from the Northwest, and he said back there that the farmers in the area would just take a clump of soil and they'd taste it and they'd smell it, and they would know how good their soil was, if it needed anything, what it needed, just from their sense of taste and smell of the soil.
Yeah, especially when it's not all sprayed, and we don't use any spray at all. If we ever need spray, which we really don't at all, my spray is I mash up and put in a blender till it's nothing, garlic and red peppers. And I just blend and blend and blend. And then I put it to a couple of gallons of water, because now it's just powder, totally pulverized. And then I'll spray it. But you know what? It's been so many years since I had to do that. I just didn't need to do that because the soil is so healthy. The the plants are so strong.
They don't get pests.
Yeah, they're able to resist all this, but you know what they're not able to resist?
Getting picked by you.
That also, but they're not able to resist groundhogs, those little dirty rats.
Oh.
So there we are. And we, fortunately...
I was wondering if your remedy would work for raccoons.
Raccoons? I don't think so. I don't think so. And I haven't been aware that raccoons go into the garden and start eating things up. I'm not aware of that. So... with all that said, I got a big pot and a big pile of tomatoes on a very, very, very low temperature. So they slowly break down. And then I put some sweet basil in, and I'm thinking about the show.
Yeah, I had a similar experience yesterday. I'm visiting my mom. She's got a partial garden. It's a little difficult for her, but she just can't give up having a garden around. So tomatoes, of course, are in season. So I took a whole bag of tomatoes, and I scalded them, and I peeled them, and I used them for chili. And then from a farmer's market earlier, I'd gotten some tongue and heart, and I used her hand grinder because I couldn't get the butcher to grind it for me.
Yeah, they won't.
Hand ground the stuff and mixed it with some other ground meat and had a fresh pepper. And I got an organic onion and the organic beans and I had corn that I had stuck in the freezer a little bit earlier when it was just ready at the farmer's market. Oh my gosh, this chili was to die for.
Wow.
And I think of all the richness of everything contributing to that one meal, you can taste it. You can taste all that love and care and
flavor, the depth of flavor of the nutrients.
Yes.
When there are nutrients missing, and we see that, you know, when you go into the grocery store and you take a buy, a beautiful tomato, and you bring it home and you take a bite in it, and it tastes like cardboard, there's something missing. So this...
definitely. This reminds me of one of my favorite jokes.
I love jokes. Go for it.
Okay. How can you tell if somebody has no friends?
No what?
No friends.
Oh. They smell of garlic?
No. They buy zucchini in the supermarket.
Well, yeah, especially.
All you have to do is grown one zucchini plant one time ever.
Exactly, and it starts early because you get the flowers.
Right.
Oh, the flowers are amazing. We pick the flowers of the male plants. They come big and beautiful, and there's a couple of Sicilian recipes I'll tell you, and then we're going to. This is all a prelude to the subject, but I'm going to tell you two recipes. Can I, Carol?
Sure, go for it.
One are the flowers, and they're still available. If you go to your farmer's market, you can find these beautiful yellow flowers, and this is a very specific Sicilian recipe. And what you do with those beautiful flowers, you just gently rinse them because they're so delicate. And there's two ways to do it. You make a very, very thin batter of a little flour and egg and a drop of milk, salt and pepper. No garlic. This is such a delicate flavor. You don't want to overwhelm it with anything. And then you take the flour and dip it in there, and then you have your pan with olive oil. Now, the olive oil is not too hot or not too cold. If it's too cold, I'm sorry, I don't know numbers. If it's too cold, it'll sit there in the pan and absorb all the oil and taste greasy. If it's too hot, this flour is so thin, it'll burn instantly. So you got to make sure that it's not too hot and not too cold. You dip it then gently into the oil, and then you turn it, and then you put it on a plate with paper towels. Now, some people put a really thin slice of Italian cheese in the middle. I like ricotta salata because that's got a punch to it, but it's very thin because you don't want to have to overcook the flour to get the cheese to melt. Then it won't be so good. So very thin slice. Some people put an anchovy in the middle. That's not unusual at all. So you brown them, and then you take it, and there's a plate of these beautiful, very lightly browned flowers. And I can tell you something. You can't make enough of them. There's nobody in the family that doesn't love them. And it's hard to make enough. So it's always special because the quantity is always limited. But then there is something else that I just learned, and I saw it on television. This is really amazing because I never thought of this before. It's a way to cook eggs. So this is called a French egg, breakfast egg. So you take about 3 tablespoons of water, and you put it in your pan that you're going to cook your eggs, a medium-sized fry pan, okay? And you turn up the heat on low until you start to see the water bubbling. You've taken the eggs out, and with nothing else, just a trace of salt, you beat them up. No butter, no milk, nothing. You beat them up, and then you put them into this warm, slightly hot pan. Now, the way they showed you, you're sitting there mixing. These eggs take about 10 to 12 minutes to cook. Have you ever heard of a 10 to 12 minute egg?
That's a whole lot.
Exactly. So you sit there stirring it. Now, I learned a little trick. I get a whisk, and I'm stirring and stirring so no clumps grow. If the egg starts to coagulate, I pull it off the fire and then continue stirring continuously. And what ends up, and then I pull it off when it looks like custard. It looks like hollandaise. And then I take 2 tablespoons of water and continue stirring for about a minute after it comes off the fire. Then I get a bowl and put this into a bowl. And I have these little kind of hard crackers. And you just scoop it up with the cracker. It's like eating a bowl of custard. And guess what? If you're getting organic eggs... The eggs we have are organic and fertilized. If you're getting organic and fertilized eggs, what you are getting is priceless in terms of nutrition. And so this leads us into our topic of today.
Which is what you and I were just discussing yesterday. Like, what are we going to talk about on our show this week? And that started the whole avalanche of ideas. It was the sulfur in eggs.
Exactly.
You all know if an egg goes bad, what do you get? This enormous sulfurous smell that goes out. So eggs really, actually I found this as I did a little search. Eggs are the richest source, dietary source of sulfur that we have. And sulfur, in turn, is the third most common element in the earth.
Wow.
That we take in. So, so very important to us. Remember, we spent a whole show on aluminum, which was the second. Now we have the third. But this is a lot more practicality in how we operate our metabolism and our bodies. Some of the other things from the garden that really are loaded with sulfur. You mentioned one of them, garlic, onions, all the cruciferous vegetables like broccoli and kale and cauliflower. They all have the sulfurous compounds in broccoli. It's called sulforaphane. Very, very rich source of that. And one of the things that I came across many years ago, I thought was very odd. You know, all of a sudden you're getting older and you're going to go into menopause, and they start telling you to eat broccoli like crazy. Like, why in the world weren't we eating broccoli all along?
If exactly.
Why do we wait till?
Yeah, we have symptoms.
Right. But it is the sulfur in those vegetables that help us metabolize our hormones. So we're having this hormone disarray going on.
So,
and sometimes estrogen is way lopsided in relationship to the others, and the sulfur helps us deal with it.
I want to name off quite a few of the sulfur-containing vegetables. Many of us didn't know that arugula and cauliflower and bok choy and collards and broccoli and horseradish, adding horseradish to our foods. And broccoli sprouts are like the explosion. They are nature's wonder nutrients, thousands of times more concentrated in the nutrient than even the entire vegetable. Then we have kale, we have Brussels sprouts, we have kohlrabi.
Kohlrabi, yeah.
I don't know it. I don't even know what it tastes like. Then cabbage.
We eat that here. It looks kind of like a turnip. It's sweeter than a turnip.
Uh-huh, and mustard greens.
You can peel it, eat it raw. You can peel it and cook it like mashed potatoes, if you like that kind of thing. I prefer just eating it raw.
Uh-huh.
And my mother says continuously, make sure you don't let them get too big. They get woody.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
So she got upset with me. I was at the farmer's market, and I brought her one. The size of the kohlrabi was like a small child's head, a baby's head.
Whoa.
Oh, my gosh, it's going to be too woody to eat. But it was not. It was a variety that was just perfect. She said, if you'd let that get any bigger, it would be woody.
Well, she's right, I must say. So, you know, what is this sulfur doing for us? And what we're dealing with, oh my gosh, here I thought we were going to have a simple back to basics show, and guess what happened? It really just exploded, and it exploded from the fact that there is so much information on what these sulfur vegetables are doing for us. That is just amazing. So let's go back to some of the basics. So let's start here. If we're feeling brain fog, headachy, PMS-y, infertility, blood sugar imbalances, inflammation, fatigue, chronic illness, aging, weight gain, you might be suffering from a sluggish detox in your body. Your body's not able to dump the toxins that are coming in fast enough. And what does that have to do with? That has to do with liver function. And one of the number one basic parts of liver function is the way it works through these sulfur nutrients and vegetables and foods and supplements to allow the body to release toxins. Carol?
Well, that brings us to, drum roll.
Yay.
The number one detox molecule, so important that the liver makes it itself, doesn't rely on alternative source, your body makes it itself. It's called glutathione, which is just a sulfur molecule with some methionine that it's gotten from glycine, glutamate, or cysteine. However, your body can make it from all of these things. Glutathione is this magic, magic detox substance created by your liver. And we have two kinds of detoxification going on in our liver. One, where we've talked about being antioxidant many, many times. That's the first part of the process of detoxification by your liver. And glutathione is a premier antioxidant. It's right at the top of it. Anything. It far exceeds, you know, we talk about vitamin C, vitamin E, other antioxidants often on this show, but glutathione is the premier. And then, back to our theme here, the sulfur. Because it contains the sulfur, the next thing that your liver does to detox is to take substances and bind it with a molecule, and sulfuration is the process. And that renders whatever you're hooking it onto water-soluble, and you get it out of your body. Your body's able to detox so many things. The list is huge. One of the interesting things I heard about glutathione, you sort of referred to it a little bit. They looked at, in a study I saw many years ago, what people had in common who lived to a very, very old age. And what they had in common, one of the things, was they naturally had a lot of glutathione. So doesn't that make sense? When you're living in a world where we have so many things that are stressing our detoxification systems, if you naturally, whether it's genetically or you feed yourself plenty of sulfur-containing things, we talked about already, you have a foot up in successful aging. I'm so excited about that. That's one of my areas. Now that I am aging, seems to me faster and faster every day, I want to do it at the best possible way. So I am really concerned about my glutathione levels, for one thing.
And what happens is glutathione isn't alone. It has multiple cofactors that when they work together, there is a synergy, as all nutrients are. So let's talk a little bit more about glutathione. Glutathione is considered to be the master antioxidant for every single cell in the body. And it's produced in the cell of the body, and it protects the cells against oxidation and aging. It also is the active and most effective form, reduced glutathione, and it needs to be combined with phospholipids very often to allow it to be taken orally, because it's an amino acid. It's three amino acids. It's glutamine, glycine, and cysteine. So it can get broken down very easily by stomach acid. Glutathione protects the cells from oxidative damage, which helps down the and slow down the aging process and keeps the cells from dying prematurely. Glutathione is important to support liver health. Very important to give high glutathione with someone with a weak liver. And it supports a healthy functioning of the cells while supporting immune function. Very powerful. And it works in synergy with other nutrients. And very often, the power of this synergy has to do with the sulfur-containing nutrients. So, Carol, where should we continue here? Or go now? One more thing I'd like to say about glutathione. When we are so concerned about our mucus in our lungs, about protecting our lung tissue and building our immune system or maintaining our immune system, the number one nutrient with others, but number one, 1A, 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 we're dealing with glutathione. High glutathione protects the alveoli of the lungs and allows a mucus which allows the lung tissue to be protected from all the toxins we're getting and breathing in. Now, Carol.
Okay, so I just wanted to mention briefly, we said the liver makes it on its own, but it needs riboflavin, that's B vitamin, vitamin C, vitamin E, and selenium.
Riboflavin's B2.
Right. So we also sometimes use a supplement called N-acetylcysteine.
NAC.
NAC. Now, we talked about this a little bit because the FDA has kind of put pressure on some companies, and I understand Amazon will no longer sell it. But NAC has been shown to so much boost your immune system and your metabolic functioning that people are suggesting this as a preventative to keep you well, to use this on a basis all the time. So as a precursor to glutathione with that very important cysteine molecule in there, it's very, very valuable. And one more thing to mention about that, cysteine has a sulfur in there. Where does that sulfur come from that you incorporate into your glutathione? It comes from the amino acid cysteine. So that's been so valuable. You mentioned about detoxification. People don't really know that N-acetylcysteine is essential for Tylenol toxicity. I think people have been so much told to go and use Tylenol that it's safe. We think it's safe because it's sitting there on the counter and you have rows and rows of different kinds of acetaminophen and Tylenol, and people buy this like crazy and they use it for pain relief. But there have been severe overdoses, and it's in order to get it out of your body, if you were to go to an emergency room, they would use N-acetylcysteine to help you get this out of your body. Another thing that's interesting, you talked about the mucolytic effect. We've gotten, over the last year, people have had lung things and they can't get rid of the mucus buildup in their lungs.
Because it's so dry. It becomes right. So dry. It becomes sticky like rubber cement. Go on.
Right. And the mucolytic effect allows the moisture to enter that mucus and break it down as well and make it watery. So it's actually been incorporated into drugs and nebulizers that people use for, say, the treatment of asthma. If you're not clearing your lungs very well, you have this mucus building up and sitting there because you're not clearing. So it's such an important, mucolytic is the word for it, because it kills the mucus. Lytic is like,
it breaks it up. It thins it. It makes it watery. Then, you know, when I was in training, we heard about this drug that we didn't really have in the States, but it was in Europe. And it was the first line therapy. When someone came in with bronchitis, with pneumonia, it was first line therapy to give this thing called Mucomist. Well, what was Mucomist? At the time, we didn't know. I looked it up. It's NAC. And it's a very strong, effective spray of NAC. And you spray it, and you literally start coughing, which is a little scary when you're seeing someone cough to that degree, and coughing, and the end result is that often they spit up something, often after the coughing, they just start breathing better. And that's the NAC. Now, NAC is available. It's just not available on Amazon. So it is something, it really doesn't age. So I have it in my cabinet, and I keep it there so I can use it. I mean, you can take it every day. If you're older, if you have a tendency to pneumonia, but it also is a glutathione precursor, so you can take it every day very nicely. Or you can save it for when you need it. But there's another few things about the sulfur-containing nutrients and that I want to go into. This one is really important. Well, they all are really important. They're essential. They're baseline. We know the words, but very few of us understand what they really are or how they act on the body. And that's what we said. I said, well, let's go back to basics. Let's talk about how they act. And my mind was blown by how much scientific information there is on glutathione, lipoic acid, and sulforaphane, which is an extract of
this. Right, and that's what those broccoli sprouts are just loaded with. Again, the sulfur, it all goes back to sulfur.
Can you?
Can I tell a story?
Please.
This is something that happened very, very early in my career. So I've graduated from the University of Wisconsin at pharmacy school, and I moved to Texas, and I have my first job in a pharmacy. And along comes a customer one of the first few days, and she said to me, what can I do for chigger bites?
I wouldn't know.
What?
Get me that book over there, would you?
Tiny little kind of reddish colored mites, and they're in the grass all over, and they kind of burrow in your skin,
and they move.
Intense, yes. And it's like you're just like, why didn't I learn anything in pharmacy school, right? Anyway, so I soon found out, and I was just visiting with a friend of mine from Texas, and we were actually talking about this because it's no longer on the shelf, and we used to sell a lot of this down in Texas anyway, and it was called sulfur and cream of tartar lozenges.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's exactly what it was used for. If you were going out...
Would you put it topically?
No, you would suck on this lozenge.
Oh, and then you have a fragrance, and these little bugs don't like it.
Right, right. And interesting enough, I was checking into this further, that some people claim it keeps off mosquitoes. Some people claim it keeps off ticks. And we were wondering why we don't have this. But I did take a little bit of a look at this, and some compounding pharmacies may offer this because it was a good old-fashioned remedy, and you just sucked on this lozenge every day when you went to play outside. What a cool thing. There was an alternative I learned back in those Texas days that if you were going out in the tall grasses and you didn't want those chiggers on you, you would buy from the plant department or a gardening store, you would buy pure sulfur powder. And
wow.
You would dust it all over your legs.
Oh, that must have smelled delicious.
Yeah, especially if you sweat. But if you were going out into the grasses, you should dust your pants at least up to your knees with the sulfur powder. Now, how cool is that? And the sulfur powder was in the garden store in the first place because people would dust their rose bushes with this to keep off insects. So it was
those mites
so essential that even your rose bushes wanted it if there was not enough in your garden for the plants. So I learned a lot, and I'm thinking this is something maybe we should bring back, sulfur and cream of tartar tablets. So,
well, that's interesting.
Smell a little bit like sulfur.
Delicious.
Sulfur.
Well, would I don't really know cream of tartar, but would garlic suffice?
I wonder. It's a wonderful source of sulfur, so if you chew on a garlic clove every day, maybe. I don't know. It wasn't popular in the chigger days. I don't know.
So let's go back to the start of this, and not the start, the middle. What is sulforaphane? And let me just define it for you, because you're going to be hearing a lot about this. Tremendous research is being done on this, and this is literally a concentrated extract of broccoli sprouts. But the research is started out in Johns Hopkins, and now it's spread. But so what is sulforaphane? Sulforaphane is a sulfur-rich compound found in cruciferous vegetables, the broccoli, bok choy, which I had forgotten to say, and cabbage. It's been shown to provide powerful health benefits in these foods. So we hear a lot about it in relationship to cancers, in relationship to detoxing the liver, in relationship to blocking one of a major cause of illness in this country at this time, and that's what you call steatorrhea or fatty liver disease, which is blocking our ability to detox. And this sulforaphane, this sulfur compound, is assisting to block this. But there's a couple other things, and one Carol brought to my attention, so I'm going to bounce it back to her, that it's being used in autism with enough success to be written up multiple times, which I saw. So Carol, can you explain that to us? How could that work?
I think it works just as it would work for anybody else who's trying to improve their detoxification. One of the hallmarks of children who are in the autistic spectrum is they really struggle to get rid of toxins. So I would say you're moving on the same pathway. I believe those children are low in glutathione, and you just support that pathway as much as you can. One physician was using a product called Sulforzyme, and I heard that he had children who were not talking begin to talk. So I don't have solid data on that. It's just,
observation of a doctor working with those patients.
Right. So I'd like to, before we get too far, we should say, how can you use glutathione itself? And I got some glutathione-containing capsules because I read, it was on Marcus Circus's website, that if you had a pure glutathione capsule, you could empty that, dissolve it in some saline, and use that in your nebulizer. And this will give, especially your lungs, as we were talking about earlier, a good dose of glutathione, and you bypass the stomach, so you don't have to worry about that breakdown that the stomach could do, the glutathione, if you just took that capsule orally.
It'd also thin the mucus, wouldn't it?
Right, it certainly would.
And it would protect the lung cells.
Really important thing. I know you do this in your office. My husband, who had a small medical office, every single one of his patients who came in for an IV also got IV glutathione. Again, IV because you were bypassing the body's breakdown mechanism in the gut when you were digesting it. But that glutathione, Dr. David Perlmutter demonstrated with one of his patients, after an IV glutathione, a Parkinson's patient had like almost immediate and albeit temporary relief of the tremors and the difficulty in walking. It's quite miraculous. I can't say that happens for everybody, but again, I think it reflects the really important aspect of how essential glutathione is to your body.
So glutathione is pretty much the base, one of the bases. Sulforaphane is down the line somewhat, but I just want to go through possible effects of sulforaphane. What we are looking at, we're looking at anti-cancer effects. In test tubes, they're showing a blocking of the proliferation of multiple cancers. One of them is prostate, the other is breast, the other is colon, the other is pancreatic, and it goes on. But they're showing a blocking of these cancers. Then it can have anti-diabetic effects. It lowers blood sugar levels, and these have studies behind them. The studies on the cancer are in development right now. Many people are quite excited about this nutrient. And then we discussed it, autism. And then it protects against sun damage. Your skin is more protected when you're in the sun. But it's an internal sunblock. And it talks about the fact that there have been multiple studies showing it can protect against brain damage from trauma. And guess what? The basics. We're back to basics again. It can improve constipation. Yay!
Yeah.
So,
I have an important piece I don't want to leave out here.
Go, please.
Because many people think that they have a reaction to sulfa. They will say sulfa.
Uh-huh.
And they can have...
Oh, this is important.
Rashes and burning skin and burning ears and things like that. They have an unpleasant reaction to
it. It can be dangerous.
Well, it could be. But what one of the main reasons for it is a lack of a mineral called molybdenum. So your molybdenum resources come from your water and your soils. Soils and water can be too low. And it's such an important cofactor in the for enzymes. So the enzyme involved here is sulfite oxidase. So molybdenum has to be there in adequate amounts for you to enter into this whole cascade where sulfur ultimately becomes like glutathione. So, you know, complicated number of steps, which NaC is right in there. Any type of sulfur-containing stuff can be feeding into this as raw material for glutathione. So the best man at my wedding had reacted to garlic all the time. It made his ears burning red. He couldn't eat garlic. And one day he was in my husband's office having an IV, and whatever was in there, probably some sort, maybe he was having glutathione, I don't really remember. But my husband took one look at him, and he went and he got him some supplemental molybdenum, faded away immediately. So it's something to look into if you have, sulfur is so essential to people, you need to get it in. But a molybdenum deficiency will make it impossible.
Oh, and I've seen that.
Yeah, a flip side of that is it's also possible to have too much molybdenum. So when you're supplementing, make sure that you don't go overboard and use too
more
much.
More isn't better.
Right, more is not better.
The right amount is the best.
Right, it can cause a copper deficiency, and then you have a whole new set of other problems, but is so, so important. And it comes up with some frequencies. People say, I can't use sulfa drugs, I can't eat onions, I can't eat garlic, it bothers me. This is probably the missing key. And it's so important and a cofactor for other enzymes, including your energy cycles, the Krebs cycle to make energy, that you should look into it if that's
what you experience.
Right.
Now, we have so much time left, and I want to go to the next piece, and I know we're not complete with either of these because there's just so much information, but I hope we just tickled your interest so you'll start looking this up. Have some time. Sit there and be ready to just... It's a page-turner when you start reading about these. But the next one is lipoic acid. Lipoic acid is very interesting. I learned about it quite a few years ago. I was in Germany, and we really hadn't heard about it here much. You know, we knew the word, but we didn't know its effect. And I was listening to a German doctor give a lecture, and he was talking about the fact that he had people with severe neuropathy to the point where they, and they were diabetic neuropathy. They were having difficulty walking, difficulty feeling, chronic pain. And the end result, he did IV lipoic acid, and that resolved. And he wrote this up, and he continued to do research on lipoic acid, and I'm going, what the heck is this? How does it work like that? And what we're learning and realizing is lipoic acid is another sulfur metabolite. When you use lipoic acid, it enhances the life and continues the recycling of glutathione. So you take, I'm going to make a statement, you take 600 of glutathione and you end up with the effectiveness of 2400 because it recycles, It recycles vitamin E. And so you get more benefit out of the nutrient you're taking. It also recycles vitamin C. So it is this powerful, and this is very interesting, water and fat soluble. That's why it can work on vitamin E and work on vitamin C. It's water and fat soluble sulfur-based antioxidant. Where I learned about lipoic acid was that people would go to different countries and they would pick mushrooms. And mushrooms can be beyond delicious, but they also can be quite toxic. So people who pick mushrooms all over the world mostly, and the majority of the time, know what they're doing. But sometimes they don't. And they eat a bad mushroom, and it literally shuts down their liver. And they are dying. If they get to the hospital in enough time and get an injection of lipoic acid, you can 100% stop that action. And the people just, they rest and get up and walk out. It's amazing to see. And what you're doing is literally blocking the poison's effect on the liver. Carol?
There's another piece of... Isn't alpha lipoic acid really high in potatoes? I just heard potatoes flash into my mind.
I'm not aware of that. I know it's really high in asparagus. But I don't know potatoes. I'd have to look that up.
Yeah, we'll have to look that up.
I'll do it while you're talking.
I want to say one more thing that's so important with the sulfur story is that it forms in the body, it forms a molecule in our gut called methylothionine. And the thiol, when you see something that's with T-H-I-O in it, that means sulfur as well. And the function of that molecule that your body makes is to complex with heavy metals. And so it stays in the gut and it's eliminated with the help of this sulfur-containing compound. So it's not going to get absorbed into your whole body and deposit all over the place. Just talked about alpha lipoic acid, which is excellent for gathering up those small, heavy metals. And particularly, it's one of the few things that helps pull it out of your brain. Because as Corinne said, it's both fat-soluble, water-soluble, crosses the blood-brain barrier, and helps bring heavy metals that have somehow established themselves in your brain.
It's a powerful detoxer. And when I'm trying to detox, people, one of the main components of my protocol is lipoic acid. And then, guess what? Cilantro. So I have the makeup cilantro, pestos or cilantro. I have them poured over their foods, over their salads. In a pesto, they just put it on their on their vegetables. It's delicious. It's got some nuts, it's got some seeds, and it's drawing metals out of the body. And guess what, darling? Right as usual. Let me just name a couple of lipoic acid. Spinach is high, broccoli, yams, and potatoes, yeast, brewer's yeast, tomatoes, Brussels sprouts, carrots, beets, rice bran, red meats, particularly the organs that you were talking about, are good sources of lipoic acid. But when we're talking about the broccoli and the vegetables that contain the sulfur compounds, they talked about how you cook them makes a big difference. First of all, raw is very good, and you're going to get all the benefits, but you have to chew. You really have to chew a lot to break them down so you can get that. If you boil them, you literally deactivate many of the nutrient compounds that you're hoping to get. Some of them will be activated again in your intestine, but not in the full component. Whereas steaming them can break it down to the degree that you can begin to digest, and slightly sautéing them, like the Chinese do, can also slightly break it down and maintain it available to you. They say that in boiling them, you lose a tremendous amount of the potential healing that you have. So here we are, Carol.
Yeah, at the end of our show already.
I got hours more to talk about. Because it's such an interesting subject. And what are we all interested in? We're interested in detox. So we detox in these weird ways. We starve, we do this, we do that. You know, I had a sick little child who had possibly some brain problems, possibly. We didn't know exactly how to evaluate. The child was 6 months old, born to a drug-addicted parents. So what do you do? So what I did and what I recommended was, that's when we got chickens. And we started feeding the chickens. I bought lecithin and I fed it to the chicken. Oh my God, these chickens are so healthy. And nuts and seeds, and they all were fed to the chickens and organic grains, and used the egg yellow and the egg custard, like I spoke about in the beginning of the program, and fed it to the child. And guess what? This is one of the brightest people I know right now. So I don't know if the child was going to have brain problems, but there was a high probability, and we interceded at that point. The next thing is, I'll never forget the story of, I don't remember his name, the president of Sony. You know, he was a baby right after the war, and at that point the Japanese were starving, and his mother, her husband had died, been killed during the war, and she was then responsible for bringing up this child. And she promised herself that no matter what, she would get one egg a day and feed her child. And that's what she did his whole life. He ate one organic, fertilized egg a day and became one of the most innovative inventors and creators, which created Sony. So think about it. Think what foods can do for you, how they can support you, how they can support your mind, your immunity, your health, your parents, your kids. Don't underestimate foods. They're, you know, we underestimate what is abundant or can be abundant. And if it's rare, oh, I want that exotic nutrient from northern Mongolia that grows for 2 weeks a year and people have to hike up and blah, 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 and it costs me all this money. Not necessary. If we look at what's around us. Carol?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I said, the richest form of food, sulfur, is that egg. This will be posted on our Facebook page. Visit us on Facebook, Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne and Carol. Give us your questions, your comments. We'd love to hear from you.
We love comments.
And we'll be back.
Okay, Carol, thank you. It's always a pleasure, and I always learn whenever we're together.
Yes, me too.
Thank you for being with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye.
Bye.
So, we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Frenari, RPACCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is frenarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.